Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Joseph goes in and bowls in! Dudley's left it! Well, if they're in trouble before, they are definitely taking on water now. They're 59 for 4, still trailing by 6.
Hello, I'm John Norman, host of the Following On podcast from TalkSport, which follows England's path through the 3 tests, 5 ODIs and 3 T20s here in the Caribbean. And while it may be sunny in the West Indies, there's a dark cloud hanging over England after they were dominated in the second test.
Jimmy Anderson, new over, short and pulled away by Campbell for the winning runs. He punches the air in celebration. The West Indies have beaten England.
Can it get any worse? Well, join us every day to find out. It's the Following On podcast, and we'll see if the West Indies can make it a clean sweep.
Hello and welcome to The Ruck. I'm Owen Slott, somewhat shaken, completely in love with the Six Nations all over again. Yes, I am one of the 11 times pundits who, in chorus, all tipped Ireland to win on Saturday. Conversely, it was the day it all came together for England, every hope and every plan and every loose end. Those were the words of Stephen Jones in the Sunday Times on Sunday morning. And anyone here recognise this? There are implications to the game extending beyond the present competition. This may be one small step towards Yokohama.
No, we don't recognise
it. Greeted by science. That was you in the Times this morning, Barnsley.
Seems a long time ago when I was sitting up in my bed in Ireland thinking about it.
Words of wisdom, all easily forgotten. So it's me today with Barnsley and our inimitable ray of sunshine, Steve Jones. Great to see you, boys. I think it's fair to say that not one of us has held back in our criticism of Eddie Jones over the last 18 months or so. But after that Titanic victory, how much are we obliged to reassess? We're also going to be joined from our Dublin studios by Peter O'Reilly. Regulars to this show will know that in his intelligent and understated way, Peter is the man we go to find out why Ireland always get it so right. Not quite the same subject matter today. And another regular, one with 109 international caps, joins us. That's Sarah Hunter, the England captain, with whom we will discuss the opening round of the Women's Six Nations. First, I've got a couple more quotes for you, gents. This one, it's a short one. Maybe Billy Vunipola makes it. That's Brian O'Driscoll a few days before kickoff, discussing how many England players will get into the Ireland side. He came up with just the one. We'll return to that a bit later. This is really a quiz question. Here's the quote. The Dublin game had about 12 minutes of rugby worth watching. The rest of the game was about as much fun to watch as a censorious dentist unimpressed with your dental hygiene. So which nation's media contributed that, do we think?
Would it be an N nation, for instance, that's now completely panicking and hates the idea of England being any good? And even then, it's utterly pathetic.
I think you're close to the mark there. Yeah, yeah, getting warmer.
I assume it's a New Zealand journalist and not a member of the New Zealand coaching panel.
No, that it is a Kiwi journalist. And yes, I suppose that's very predictable. I think your point, Steve, is probably anyone would have watched that and gone, shit.
In a different way, talk about 12 minutes of rugby. I thought it was a classy international, and it was one of the most sustained performances by both sides. The intensity of it dropped briefly in about the third quarter. I just thought it was class, and it looked as if it what it was currently, the two form teams in world rugby.
All right, let's just get straight to it. Sometimes you see a good performance, and it's a good performance, you say, well done. But I think the point about that England performance is we're sort of reassessing and trying to answer how much has the landscape actually shifted?
England were outstanding. Steve's right, it was a fine test match, but it was one test match. And let's think about what Eddie Jones says. Eddie Jones gets very uptight when we're critical of England when they lose a game. So he's probably right. I think there is a case of overreaction. It's when they lost five and they lost their shape. There seemed to be a reason. But Jones, undoubtedly, we all know deep down he's targeting Japan. So to look at this one game and say they're on the march again, it could still be presumptuous. I want to see what they do against a French team who will offer a very different, almost an opposite sequence of threats to Ireland. What happens on Sunday? We had an Ireland team who are, their greatest strength is their greatest weakness. They're brilliantly coached, but they're so well coached they have no flexibility in their game. France are not coached at all. They are purely flexibility. So that opens up a different can of worms for England. And Chris Ashton after the game was saying, we'll be coached and we'll be prepared in a different way for France. Now, you can look at that game and say, maybe Joe Schmidt is a little bit one tricky. If Eddie Jones comes up with a different England plan where they tweak and they adjust and they go and put 30 points on France and they're magnificent and they close out the French counter-attack and offloading game, then I think we start to say, hey, that is outstanding. England are serious contenders. At the moment, you know, the England management, they don't like it when you slate them for a bad performance and a defeat. So let's just
No one likes being slated, do they? Everyone's sensitive out there.
But they're always saying, you're presumptuous, it's too early. Let's just wait and see next week. That is not decrying what England did. I thought they were outstanding, but I think judgment just has to be held back.
So, OK, that's interesting. So they've had one big statement performance. Barnes is correct. It's got to be very different next time. But when you've hit that level of intensity and execution, for me, that breeds confidence, doesn't it? I know that's a cliche, but surely that's what is fair to expect next week now.
Yeah, totally. But I think it's even more than that. First of all, I'm not interested in the World Cup till we all land in Tokyo. Hopefully land safely in Tokyo. Not interested in it. This was a great Six Nations performance in a massive Six Nations occasion. I said it mysteriously all came together because there was no one knew they were going to play as well as that. So why it's all come together is actually almost irrelevant as well. But what I would say is there was definitive evidence on the day that some people who have been fringe players are now have ascended to the international summit. And amongst them, I'd say Jamie George, I thought, was excellent. Line out, scrummaging as far as we could see. Round the field, he was quick. I thought Kyle Sinclair took another step forward. Henry Slade took many steps forward. Jack Nowell looked like he was fitting into the team that Eddie wanted him into there. Yeah, as Stuart says, especially against someone like France, could go wrong this week. But they now know that they have a world-class performance in them. And I don't... There was nothing in that on Saturday which suggested that it was a total one-off.
No, Owen, you said that sort of performance has to breed confidence. I think what it breeds in England and breeds in teams is clarity, because that was the word I thought that England lacked in the last 18 months.
Even
when they were on the end of that winning run, their performances were getting murky. It was hard to define what they were doing. And I thought the first half hour against South Africa, they had it in the first and second test, and then they lost their way again. This was the game when there was a tactical plan and there was a clarity. And, you know, it's all well and good being like Ireland, having a mastermind, but if someone else ruins it, and that's the beauty of rugby, it's not like the theatre, you know, you can't learn your part and then there's no one there to wreck it. In rugby, you have all your lines, and then England come along and they put a great big number 8 foot in the spoke and everything's gone and Ireland don't know what to do. England looked to me like a team who have options. You know, they're built on power, but there is subtlety, there is variety, and the other big word is balanced. And I'll go back to this whole story that seemed to... It went viral, didn't it? How many Englishmen would get in the Irish team? If you asked me that question, I'd say I'm not going to answer it because it's a stupid question. It's irrelevant. Selection is not about who's got the most good players. It's about who has the right balance. Manu Tuilagi.
You're a bit serious, Barnes. It's just a fun little thing. Come on, lighten up, man.
No, you don't judge Manu Tuilagi without subtlety either side of him. You see Slade differently when he's got power inside him. Elliot Daly and Jack Noel working together, the sort of the hustler and the class act. You know, you can't look at them one after one in numbers. It doesn't work like that.
I agree as with what Grumpy Barnes just said then. What was joyous about it for me, just as Stuart's just said, I've always insisted they haven't had a back three. They've had three blokes who stood out there looking like strangers. And the way they interacted, Daly, Johnny May, Slade, the outside backs and Jack Noel, I think just think was marvellous. They were so rapid with their thought patterns and the way they moved that I think England now have got another cannon to fire, because I think they've got a back three that are now dangerous.
Yeah, massive praise to Eddie Jones. There's been a chorus for Elliot Daly to play 13 for so long. And he was never the 13 because it gets him too close to the action. Let him play in the back three. I know I was one of the ones who said he shouldn't play 15, but Jones has a long-term plan and he's not worried about the errors. And whilst he dropped one ball Saturday and still has room for improvement there, what he gives a team when he's floating around in that back three, the vision, the speed, the hand is so much. So I think... I think that Eddie Jones' decision to stick with him has been an absolute masterpiece. It would have been so easy to go back to the short-term view that Brown would have been the man, and you wouldn't have argued with it. Oh,
that was my view. Put my hand up to that.
No, mine as well. I think it was a masterstroke from Jones.
Do you not
Jones.
Think, though, that a comment on how good or poor Ireland were was that Elliot Daly got through that game without really being tested under the high ball?
Yeah, well, but that's how good England are, because...
That's what I'm saying. They managed to close that down.
But it's almost like you've... It's a fullback. Fullbacks always talked about the bloke has to make the last tackle. It's one of the great fallacies about fullback. Fullbacks don't make many tackles. When they do make them, they have to be try-savers because of the nature of where they're standing.
But what I'm saying is...
Stop
interrupting.
But if you make your tackles ahead of them, then nobody talks about a fullback having to make those JPR-like tackles. If you get the squeeze on up front and the speed of line pressure is so great... then your 9 and 10 are not able to put the quality of kicks on the money as Sexton and Murray always do. So if England's press is that good, then you actually don't have to be Mike Brown or JPR Williams.
OK, I completely agree. But the point is that some people say, oh, Elliot Daly answered all the questions on Saturday. I don't think the questions were put to him at all. So
I agree
at some point further down the line, maybe whether it's France or Wales or whoever, a World Cup final... some team is going to get to him, and he's as yet unproven. I thought he was a very, very good game, but he didn't have to do that part of the game.
But do you not think I watch him play now, and you just think there are so many answers when you watch Daly play. If there are one or two questions, I don't know what you think, Steve, but I think he's made a definitive case to be the 15.
When you are an excellent all-round footballer with self-confidence and intelligence, in the end, you are going to make yourself what your coach wants you to. I just thought it was a magnificent, joyous match for English rugby. I just thought it was absolutely tremendous. Nothing against the Irish or anybody else, but it was the performance we've been waiting for so long, and I'm sure English men and women fans squared their shoulders on Saturday night.
Agreed. And how did it impact on Irish rugby? Let's see if we can get Pete on the line, shall we? Peter, great to have you back. So Ireland head up to Murrayfield this weekend looking to avoid the wooden spoon, correct?
That's probably overstating it a little bit, Owen.
Pete, what did you make of Ireland on Saturday? It was not really what anyone expected, albeit that England played a big role in that.
Just after the anthems, a colleague turned to me and said that I noticed that the Irish anthem had been pretty subdued, almost as if there was a complacency in the stadium about what was about to happen. And now we're all being very clever in hindsight, obviously, but we all all of us agreed beforehand, I think, that Ireland were going to win, that it was going to be a tight game. But realistically, when England play well, they should always be a handful for England, because it's a game of collisions. They bring more power than Ireland had to offer, and when you add power to planning and execution, that's a pretty potent cocktail. Rarely have England had, you know, such an uninterrupted preparation for a game against Ireland. It's rare that Ireland and England play the first game of the championship. And they did a number on Ireland. And what would be particularly painful for the likes of Joe Schmidt and Andy Farrell is that they were out-coached as well as out-powered. So it's a timely wake-up call. But as far as going to Edinburgh is concerned, there should be a backlash, all right. But the problem is that there were physical casualties on Saturday, as well as Ireland's pride. We're still waiting for updates on a few players. So Ireland mightn't have their strongest pack going to Edinburgh, which is where they would hope to do.
Just remind us who the players in doubt, Pete. Devon Toner, I know, is in. Yeah,
he's in doubt with. He has an ankle problem. CJ Stander, it seems, played most of the game with a fractured cheekbone and eye socket. And he's obviously a very important player for Ireland. And then there are doubts about Keith Earls with a hip pointer. And Gary Ringrose, I'm not sure what his problem is. We're just waiting to find out. So as things stand, there seem to be issues at 14, 13, 5 and 8.
There's some big players there.
What about the pattern of the Irish game? I mean, is there a concern that when you're winning, it's wonderful, and the Joe Schmidt plan is as detailed as the sport has ever seen. But England come along with the power that you mentioned. They put a bloody big spoke in the wheel, and suddenly you say, where's plan B? And I had wonder, is there a plan B?
Well, I think Schmidt, being a clever guy, is aware that he needs to develop Ireland's kind of attacking arsenal, if you like, given that they are now more analysed than they would have been before. That's the price you pay for being number two in the world. So I think that's part of the reason why he had a look at Robbie Henshaw at full back, for example, that he wants a 15 who perhaps can add more hitting the line, add more running from deep. Obviously that backfired a bit in terms of the solidity that was missing that you normally expect with Rob Kearney there. But you know, Schmidt, I'm sure, understands that Ireland have to have some variety to their game. But one thing which has remained constant throughout his time is that they rely on winning the collisions, on being good in contact and being technically excellent at the breakdown. But if you look at, I mean, the figures, the stats from Saturday were telling. If you look at Tadhg Furlong, you know, 8 carries for 5 metres. James Ryan, 16 carries for 17 metres. Stander, 11 for 6. Bundee Aki, 9 for 14. And most memorably, I think, if you think of the tackle that Courtney Laws put in on Gary Ringrose, which led to the long-range penalty for Owen Farrell, there you had a case where Courtney Laws knew what was coming next. So this English team had prepared. They knew Ireland's patterns inside out. And the number of times that the carrier got hit on the gain line and was driven backward was hugely instrumental. The number of impact tackles that England made compared to Ireland was something like 48-9. Yes, Ireland are going to need to produce something a little bit different, especially because I'd say the most interesting onlooker on Saturday was Rassie Erasmus, because if going to form, Ireland play South Africa in the quarterfinals in Japan, they're going to go up against a team who will be bigger and more powerful than them again, like England were on Saturday.
Surely when these things happen to you, a slightly cataclysmic defeat, aren't you tempted to make more changes in terms of the way you play and in personnel than you should? I mean, I would, if everybody's fit, I'd play exactly the same team. Except that I would always put Kearney there, because in the modern day of box kicking, I would always have Kearney there. You can't suddenly start trying to get them to attack differently in the middle of the Six Nations when it succeeded so brilliantly for them when they've been on the front foot before, surely.
Conor Murray and Johnny Sexton looked undercooked. Henshaw, in his defence, had played very little rugby, quite apart from the fact that he played very little rugby at 15. So for once it was England going into this game who looked physically sharper. They also, you've got to take into account the old-fashioned psychology, the psychic energy, whatever you want to call it. You know, England came to Dublin angry. They had a point to prove, and they had prepared for this game with, you know, like if you think about the start, for example, you imagine that every single pass and every single clean out leading up to the Johnny May try had been rehearsed. Going into Saturday, they'd lost one of their previous 19 games. So no, I don't see any panicky reaction to it, Steve.
Pete, thanks very much for joining us. Just finally, so obviously the Murrayfield game's huge now in terms of the personality of the team and how it responds. What sort of response do you expect? Because Scotland will be looking forward to that now.
They will, and they won the corresponding game 2 years ago when Joe Schmidt made quite a bit of the fact that Ireland had turned up to the game late because the bus had been taking a different route.
The bus that got caught in the traffic lights, that was a real disaster, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, there's fascinating psychology at play coming into this game because, as you guys know, Ireland's first opponents in Japan are Scotland, Ireland have shown yet again that they are not great tournament starters, and their most important pool game comes first against the Scots, so that's in the background. They'll be worried also that all of Scotland's tries against Italy were scored by the outside backs, where they look very dangerous and where Ireland were caught out a couple of times. It's a fascinating game. I expect Ireland, even without Toner and CJ Stander, will try and just squeeze the life out of the Scottish pack. I suppose from there, they will still give themselves a chance of winning this tournament. But obviously, it's out of their hands now. It's reliant on other results going their way.
Peter, thanks very much. Great to talk to you again.
Cheers, guys.
All right. So just finally on that England game, can we try and give it some context? Some people have been saying best England performance under Eddie Jones. I don't disagree with that. Others best since 2003. Does it belong in that company?
Yes,
definitely.
Yeah, it does.
Definitely. Definitively. I mean, they've certainly not as played as well in this country, or rather in the Northern Hemisphere, since they smashed Ireland in the 2003 Grand Slam game. And I just thought it was absolutely superb. A monumental one-off. One of the top three England performances I've ever seen, and I've been watching them for the last 97 years.
The other two being?
The Irish Grand Slam game
in 03,
yeah. Probably one of the ones about 92 when they won two Grand Slams on the trot and were just unstoppable. So they're right up there.
Yeah, I'd go definitely Eddie Jones. It's the Antipodean coach who finally got the anglicised performance he wants. Here's a bloke who's coached in a country where they don't scrum. He had his finest moment, you could argue, with the small Japan team when they outfoxed South Africa. Suddenly he got what he really wanted, a big team, and he likes to bully, he likes to batter people. It all came true. It was an outstanding performance, right up there. With Steve, I'd add the Australia away game in 2003 in the build-up to the World Cup when they got everything right. Because this was a game... wasn't pretty in every single way, but tactically and technically and clarity-wise, it was magnificent.
I just throw one in there, which wasn't of the same quality, but the sort of the surprise element to it, that England stood up so much, and the physicality of their game, was that quarterfinal in Marseille against Australia in 07.
Yeah, it was a sort of underdog's day, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, but this wasn't underdog's
quite
day.
Right,
I mean, totally different things, but in terms of a big show of spirit and personality.
Yeah.
Quite right.
Right, so Ireland underperformed. They go to Murrayfield. Scotland did a job on Italy, but I think we expect anyone to do a job on Italy now. I thought Finn Russell looked brilliant, but a 10 should look really good if they're given that much opportunity against Italy. Well, how are you seeing that this weekend?
Last year, England went to Murrayfield and wanted to do a job on Scotland, and Scotland destroyed them at the breakdown. If Ireland do as Peter says and go there to do a job on Scotland, and they're just picking and driving the meters. Scotland are ready for that sort of performance, which is why I think it's fascinating. I think Ireland have, they don't change their game radically, but they have to find a little bit of an offload here and there in the way that England didn't last year. Otherwise, Scotland definitely have it within them to win this match. And then Ireland are in a very different place. It becomes like England after that winning run. You start losing and your confidence goes, your head goes, and you're thinking, what do we do to get back on this horse? It's a massive game for Ireland.
It's a massive game for
and
Ireland.
Scotland, yeah.
I think it's even bigger for Scotland, because over the years, Scotland have said, yeah, we're definitely getting better. And they complain about not having any Lions. They complain when anyone says, sorry, Scotland are not good enough. They're only going to be fourth. They have got to win this game. It is a home game. They've got to go to Twickenham afterwards, where they probably won't win. And if they lose this game on Saturday, they're going to be lower mid-table at the very, very best. So it is a monumental game for both teams, yeah. And a great day again for the Six Nations. And Scotland have little bits of the team that come to the surface and play well for Glasgow and Edinburgh. They've still not won anything basically at any level. This is the day, lads. This is the day. I think they got the coach to do it. They've got contenders around in various positions, but this is massive, massive.
Interesting that weekend you've got two big World Cup groups of forerunners. You've got England, France. And Scotland, Ireland. And so we haven't mentioned Wales. I mean, what an opening night to the Six Nations that was. Extraordinary, phenomenally entertaining, full of really average rugby, and the biggest comeback in the history of the Six Nations.
Not a great game of rugby, you're right, but the mental strength of Wales was astounding. And I use that word because I know, yes, they've got a reasonably good record in Paris, but over the years, Wales have so often failed when they've come away from Cardiff. Even at 16-0, you know, they went in at half time, and I thought they're not out of this if they get the first score.
I said to the guy sitting next to me at dinner, we were watching and eating. I said, I still think Wales will win this, and of course, I had the balls to put no money on it at all.
I think the thing is with Wales, the way the game went and it was the first game, etc., you can almost forget the performance. All they had to do was win, which they did. And the double effect was that the match showed why they should have started with Dan Biggar, why they always should start with Dan Biggar. I don't care about assessing what Gareth Anscombe does, how competent he is. Dan Biggar is the test match animal. He is dishevelled. Sometimes he has bad days. He's not been great for Saints. But Wales are a different team when he's out there. And I think if they can get Jake Ball back, maybe I'm not sure if they can do it for this week, but I just think that they're on their way. I still got doubts over their front row. They scrummage very well, but they don't get involved as much as a Sinclair or a Tadhg Furlong. But I just thought Jonathan Davis was brilliant in defence, and I thought Dan Biggar was just a talisman when he came on.
I would say if Wales had an outstanding option to Biggar, I would look at him, because Wales are trying to develop their back play. It's a part of their game that's been weak. But Gareth Anscombe is a good player. He is not an outstanding player. And when you look at their options now, through the Six Nations, through to the Far East, then I think you say, Dan, you are the man, and you've got to give him every opportunity to just get playing flat. He can do it, but he needs to be pushed there sometimes. He's going to be a very important man in this Welsh team.
Okay, all right, just some quick round of predictions. So we've got the Six Nations. The coming weekend starts with Ireland in Scotland, then Wales in Italy, and on the Sunday, England against France. So I'll tell you my predictions. Not very brave, but tell me if anyone disagrees. I'll go start off with an Ireland win. I think they will win in Scotland. And then,
what about an approximate margin from everybody as well? Come on, let's put ourselves on the line. Are we men or mice?
Yeah. Let's give a handicap out.
Ireland by 4, Wales by 24, England, France by England by 14.
Wales by 27, England by 21, Scotland by 6.
Ooh, nice.
Very brave. I'll go Wales, but by less than you two, because I just think Italy have got to throw up the kitchen sink at it. I think Wales by about 16. That's all. I think that Ireland by 2. That could be so close. I think England will beat France, but less. I think England. I think France will find something. I think it'll be England by 12.
Okay, excellent. And now we're going to finish today's show by our reflection on the Women's Six Nations competition. We'll be joined in a minute by Sarah Hunter, the England captain. You're listening to The Ruck, and we'll be back in a minute. Sign up for the Ruck email to receive the best comment and analysis from rugby's leading writers. That's us, guys. Every Thursday during the Six Nations. Visit thetimes.co.uk/newsletters. Welcome back to The Ruck.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
The Sarah's team started well in Ireland, very convincing win, 51-7. The other results, the real telling one was France absolutely smashing Wales by a similar score, 52-3. And that's the big matchup of the weekend, probably the big matchup of the entire championship, really, isn't it? England against France. And then the Italians beat Scotland, which was a very significant win as well. Jonesy, you saw most of this?
I did. I saw absolutely dominant England performance, full of forward power. Sarah Byrne, worth a look if anyone's watching on television. Awful result for Scotland against Italy, but Italy clearly coming on with some great, great backs, which is satisfying. And Wales, sorry, I don't buy the travel excuse. Wales keep on picking kids, and they're wrong. They keep on boasting about how young their team is. Their team was absolutely roasted up front by a massive French team.
So we're joined now by Sarah Hunter, England's winning captain from the weekend. Sarah, great to hear from you. How was the weekend for you?
It was a great weekend. Obviously, you're never sure how the first game of the Six Nations is going. You know, form from the autumns or warm-up games is a bit unknown. So, it was good to get off to quite a good start against Ireland. It's always difficult to go away to Dublin, especially on Friday night in the opening game. But, you know, we were reasonably pleased with the performance that we had out there.
Absolutely. And I understand you've got three talking points from the Women's Six Nations Championship to talk to us about.
One of the first ones being a bit closer to home is obviously the returning players from the Seven. So Emily Scarrett, Natasha Hunt, Jess Breach, and also a real key figure for us in Sarah Byrne returning for the Six Nations. All of them were not involved in the autumn, so it was good to see them back in the 15 shirt.
And that's made an immediate impact, clearly.
Yeah, I think it did. You know, I think it'll take time for sort of the three girls coming back from Sevens to transition back to 15s, but it looked like Jess Breach left off where she had when she went off to Sevens in that autumn, where she was pretty prolific try scoring. She got two on Friday evening, and Emily Scarrett, you know, just that sort of senior figurehead in that back line where there's probably a bit of inexperience with Tatiana Hurd, and, you know, Jess is still very young, and Kelly Smith, and she sort of just orchestrates out in the outside backs, and it was really pleasing to see Natasha Hunt come on and really add the pace and that live wire style play of nine that she does bring come back to 15's game. And you know, Sarah Byrne was on the rampage running through defenders for fun on Saturday night. And she's been out with a lengthy injury. So, you know, it was really good to see and welcome her back and to see that she's left off how she finished, really.
Excellent. Okay, point number two.
Yeah, so obviously the Wales-France game was that the weather conditions that hit the UK pretty badly. So Wales, they couldn't travel with their original travel plans because of the snow, and they had to move from flying from Cardiff to travel to Heathrow on the day of the game. And obviously that is such an impact on preparation, you know, and I think, yes, France are a very, very good side at the minute, and they put in a very emphatic performance, but there's no doubt that obviously the preparations that Wales had to face would have impacted how they could perform to probably the level they wanted to. So I think that's quite significant for Wales. So unfortunately, you can't do anything with Mother Nature, and they managed it the best they can to obviously still get out there in time and manage to play the game. So
you would have expected a closer contest otherwise, you're suggesting?
I think possibly it would have been interesting to see where Wales would have given France some more problems. I think knowing the Welsh and the style that they play and how they're trying to play it, I think possibly could have asked a few more questions of the French team than they possibly did. And was that due to the unfortunate travel arrangements? I think personally I wouldn't have wanted to travel all the way to France on the day of the game and then have to play such a strong side like France and it not impact performance, you know, like even though they're flying, you're still on your feet for a long time, you haven't had that chance to rest sort of fully and get all your match preparation in that you would probably otherwise
do. Okay, and finally?
Yeah, so to the last game of the Six Nations between Italy and Scotland, I think going into it people weren't sure what the result was going to be, but I think significantly Italy went down to 13 players and still went on to have a bonus point win, which for them is absolutely fantastic. You know, it was 7-all at half time and Italy were down to 13 and started the second half with 13 players, and they had not only held out Scotland, but they also got a try of their own, and I think that's quite a significant statement for Italy to make on about what they want to do in this championship. You know, I think they're the third ranked European team in the world, and that certainly showed on Friday evening as well. And I think any team might be a little bit disappointed if they, when they're up against 13 players, not to make a different impact and to really get a foothold in the game at that point and maybe try and change the game and make it difficult for Italy. But their defence held strong, and you know they went on to get that bonus point try, which sets them up nicely for the rest of the Six Nations.
In terms of England, it seems to me also that you're building a pretty awesome pack yourself. I mean, you mentioned Sarah Byrne, who was almost untackleable. I just watched the whole replay, and Hannah Botterman looks like a almost born to play international rugby. Then you've got young locks, you've got Shauna Brown, who's a physical player on the fringes. I mean, are you developing what could be called a typical English pack, like the English men's pack used to be? Because it's pretty fierce bunch.
Yeah, I think we've got great athletes and great players, like individually. And the power that people seem to have, and not only that, but becoming those ball players. And I think what's really important for us now, we've got probably the right individuals, and how do we now harness that to make sure that, like you say, we can be this pack that countries fear and is pretty destructive, whether that's that line out, that scrum, that's around the park, and that's our real job, and probably Richard Blazer's job over the next 3 years to make sure that we can really harness that. Because I think the strength and depth we've got now in the forwards, I mean, I wouldn't want to be the coaches trying to pick a team for France or for future games, you know, because we've got 2-3 people deep in most positions, especially in the forwards, you know, that will all add something and will come on and make a difference. And wherever you look, we've got that firepower. Just need to make sure that it all clicks at the same time, and that actually when it comes to line out, it's about the whole pack doing the same thing at the same time.
What about, I mean, Sunday, obviously, I mean, what a great day's rugby. It's England-France in men's and women's. Yours is at Doncaster Castle Park at 12:45. That is really possibly your biggest game since the World Cup, would that be?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, we obviously went to France last year and lost very narrowly, and we know we have real key areas to work on about how we finish games out, how we're more clinical when we get chances, because when you play the top sides in the world like France, they come very few and far between. So when you get them, you have to take them, and then actually with sides as good as France, you know, they will play until the last minute like they did against us last year in France. So mm-hmm. We know that we know there's such great encounters when we play France. You look at the semi-final in the World Cup, that was an attritional battle, and I expect Sunday to be no different. You know, they're coming into this game in incredible form. They ran New Zealand very close in one game, and then they beat them for the first time in their history in the next. So, you know, they'll be full of confidence. They are certainly a team that is getting better and better. So we're confident with the players that we've got and the team that we've got and how the squad feels, that actually if we can put in a performance we know we're capable of and we minimise our errors, then I think it will be a very close run game on Sunday, which is ultimately what you want as an international player and as a spectator, and where the women's game is, you want games to be close and tight. Sure. And not know which way they're going to go.
Good luck with that. But is it? I just want to check one thing. Is it true that now you're a professional, that you've bought a Porsche?
I wish. I'm not sure I'd know what to do with a Porsche.
Don't worry, there's three more. We wouldn't either. No, I'm just checking. It was just a wild rumour, that's all then.
Sarah, thanks so much for coming on. We're going to talk to you again next week, I think.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. Hopefully after two English wins again.
Yeah.
Okay, Steve and Stuart, thank you. We finish on our traditional sign-off, a god or a goddess of the week. I know I've got in mind. Steve, do you want to go?
Well, to be honest with you, I always try not to go for the obvious. But this week, I can't believe I'm saying this, because he's not really built along godlike proportions.
Yeah. But
my god of the week is the forthcoming Sir Eddie Jones.
I thought you were going for your 10 out of 10. I'll just explain that. So Steve, in his lifetime of giving ratings of England players, has only ever given one 10 out of 10,
yeah,
which was to Simon Shaw in the Lions
in
test
2009. Yeah.
And on Sunday morning,
I gave Mako because I could not find one reason not to give him 10 out of 10. But
well,
my God of the week
is not Mako.
It's not Mako. It's Sir Eddie Jones.
He'll be so thrilled.
It's time for media humility. I've billed him as the Tasmanian devil for the last 18 months. He is now an England rugby god. Just because Steve has said it is not going to distract me from saying Eddie Jones. It's his finest hour since Japan beat South Africa.
All right, well, I'm already outnumbered, but a player who we haven't really discussed very much, who I thought was outstanding on Saturday, and England were worried about being able to cope with the aerial bombardment. Why concerned when Johnny May is the best highball man in the world? I think Johnny May's almost pretty close to the complete wing. I thought he was outstanding.
Totally agree.
Two to one outvoted. Eddie, well done. You are the Rucks god. We worship at your altar. The altar of the great Eddie. Jonesy, Barnsley, great to see you and chat. And all you out there who have listened in, thank you very much. We'll be back again next week after the round two of what has so far been a brilliant Six Nations.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.